to the ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and this time I'm not joined by Steve or Gary. I'm joined by the wonderful, the one and only Steve Conlon, who you may also know as his alter ego, James Workshop.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
That's quite all right, quite all right. We were just discussing before we started recording about how you've been inundated with requests for podcasts.
Yes, I'd forgotten how much people love me.
It's a tough problem to have, right?
It's exhausting, honestly. You try to put people off as much as you can, but I'm irresistible. So
I've been trying to put people off for 30 something years. So
hard work.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's dedication to the cause. So, Steve, for those who may not be familiar with who you are, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, I am Steve. I am an actor. I'm the actor that Games Workshop, in a moment of madness, decided they wanted me to portray their mascot and real life CEO James Workshop. I was working for them for a few years doing like audio dramas and animations and other stuff such as that. But now I'm the face of the company internationally, and every now and then one of my friends or family will see my face on a thing and they will go, Why are you on a sign in Turkey? What is that? And I have to explain.
It's funny. Sometimes you see on like Reddit, people that have done stock photography, and they're like, I did this one photo shoot once 10 years ago, and now I'm the face of a intimate gel cream.
Yeah. Or now the Guardian keep using that one picture I did whenever they want to talk about someone cheating on their husband.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. Oh dear, terrible. So what's the favorite thing you've worked on in your past specifically with Games Workshop?
My favorite thing, that's difficult. I think the best thing I did was the Realm Slayer, the Gotrek Gunnarsson audio drama with Brian Blessed.
I was going to say, yeah, wasn't that? So I was like, fairly certain that was Brian Blessed, but fine, whatever. If you want to take that, I'll just change IMDb, shall I?
No, it was. It was starring Steve Conlon and Brian Blessed.
Supported by Brian Blessed.
Officially that order, yeah.
Good.
And then everyone else was in alphabetical order, but for some reason my name was at the front. But yeah, I got my nose bitten off by... Saying you got your nose bitten off by Gotrek is cool, but being able to say you got your nose bitten off by Brian Blessed is maybe even cooler.
Yeah, I think that's that's something for the CV, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There was an amazing... I went around the Warhammer World Museum the other day and I saw the diorama of Gotrek and Felix like jumping out of an old house. Do you know the one I mean?
I do, yeah.
And it's just... and again, we were talking about like... I've got to stop talking about Mordheim. Like, I swear I just need to create...
I don't have to.
I just feel like perhaps, I need to make like an old world, slash Mordheim podcast where I can just channel all my energy for that world into that rather than bringing it up constantly in a 40K podcast. But, we'll roll with it. So going back to the diorama, it had so many little Easter eggs and so much story and richness to it that personally I feel Age of Sigmar doesn't... Age of Sigmar, great as a game, lovely models, the freedom of round bases and lack of rank and flag does create some amazing design opportunities. But for a world, I think the old world that kind of is clearly made from so much of our cultural history, it's so easy to relate to that as a human in the 21st century. Whereas the kind of like multiverse vibe of Age of Sigmar, I think, has less of that, and also it clearly has less I haven't grown up with it as a child, so the rose-tinted spectacles are on as well.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, to try and like work out whether it's just the fact that we're old and stubborn and don't like change, or whether like there is something that hasn't quite clicked.
Yeah,
I was listening to someone who I thought was very clever when they were talking about the fact that they were talking about the importance of maps and how the old world, even though it is just someone did a very bad tracing job of the globe.
Yeah, it's like my primary school geography drawings.
But exactly that, yeah. But what it does give anyone who wants to get investors in that world is a sense of like relativity.
Mm.
Like if someone says, oh, I traveled from Curon to Altdorf, you can go, gosh, I have no idea what that means. But if you have a map in front of you, you're like, that's a long way. And there are mountains in the way. Age of Sigmar, and specifically the Mortal Realms, because it's that like astral, almost like the nine realms of kind of Asgard and Midheim and that sort of, because it's that sort of map where there isn't a very easy, quickly accessible sense of like relativity and space. They were making the argument that it makes it that much more difficult to get invested because it's just not quite as tangible. And I was like, that makes sense. And then I kind of just miss Lizard Men and the knights and the big guns.
Oh yeah. I know what you mean. And also the sense of scale. I suppose it's like, you know, when someone says, oh, that's as big as a football field, you know, most people are like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I can picture that. I know what a football field, you know, personally, I'm not a football person, but I know soccer is a very popular game.
Football fields are very good for that one specific thing.
I know, right?
We're like, give credit where it's due. They gave us all a good mental measurement.
Oh, yeah. Like if double-decker buses hadn't been as good at transporting people, then at least it could have been a measurement. But like,
exactly.
You know, soccer ball, fine, is a big, you know, people get really excited about the competition that runs every now and then, but you know, fine.
Because you can say roughly as big as a head, and that does it. So you didn't need to invent the soccer ball for that.
That's true.
But the football field definitely was a useful addition to the culture. Not so much the game, but.
Oh no, I was just being facetious and referring to football as soccer ball, just, you know, to kind of get a rise out of some of the listeners. But as an aside, for me, football, the best bit about that is when there's a really important World Cup game on, the roads are really empty, so that's the best time to drive anywhere. That's my advantage that I take during this. But as an aside, you know, when someone's like, oh, that's as big as you know, two football fields, like, okay, good, yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But when you're so far away from something, or something is so big, it's almost like there's no point of reference. And I think the closest thing that I can compare this to, slightly weird flex, is skydiving. So if you're high up on the third or fourth story of a building and you look over the edge, you're like, oh, that's quite high. I can imagine that would be pretty painful if I fell off. Or, you know, you're maybe at the top floor of a block of flats, you know, 20 stories up, you're like, wow, that's, you know, that would be me dead, you know, if I fell off here. But when you're at like 13,000 feet or something and you look out of a plane window, you're like, this just looks like Google Maps. I have no, you know, yes, I'm scared as a human because I'm scared because I understand the concept of not necessarily being the best idea that I've ever had, but you are so far up that you're just like, this just looks like a satellite picture. So I have no reference of scale. I can't see any people. I can't see any cars. I can just see, you know, effectively a really, really high fidelity ordnance survey map. And for me, the Mortal Realms is you are so far away from anything that's relatable or measurable that it's hard to connect to it.
I get that. That makes sense. Yeah.
So scrolling all the way back to that. Yeah. The Gotrex of Felix House is really cool because it's got Skaven in it. But then you look around the back, you can see like a kind of a portrait of Dorian Gray-esque portrait of a vampire. And it's just, it kind of, it really got in the kind of Warhammer feels for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, yeah, I don't think I need to encourage people to go around the museum. Like, it's great, and everyone should go in and have a look. Yeah,
I actually went on a date there once.
Wow.
I know, right?
Was that a good idea? Or
it was. It was. Yeah, yeah.
All right, then.
I think it was second or third, in fact. No, third date. Yeah. When you find someone that's willing to be dragged around the Warhammer World Museum, that's, you know, you're onto a keeper, right?
Yes, lock them in the basement. Never let them go.
Enough about your weekend activities. So, talking of the Warhammer World Exhibition, what's your kind of your favorite diorama or scene or room?
I mean, can anyone honestly say it's not the big one? The big one, the huge one that you had to walk all the way around. And
the one where there's apparently an assassin in there.
Yeah, that's the one. Nice. Well, the one with the actual smoke. Like,
oh, yeah, so good.
And like, it's everything in the museum is cool. But that's the one that I get excited when I'm in the museum with new people who haven't been in the museum yet, because that's the one where they all where they always go like everyone.
It's so wow, isn't it? And there's it's a great so example of something that's big enough for you to appreciate the scale, but not so overwhelming that that you just go, oh my god, there's just too much stuff.
Exactly. But yes, I get excited about that one because I know what's coming, and I know it never fails to elicit an audible reaction from people. So I really like that one.
I randomly ran into one of the curators in that room, in fact, and they were saying how the light changes, and it's a kind of it goes from red to blue, the sort of a blue tinted light and a red tinted light. And she was saying how that's an intentional set of colors, because clearly this is Ultramarines versus Khorne Demons, or Chaos in general. But the red insinuates that the demons, the powers of Chaos, are winning. And when it goes to blue, it kind of highlights or brings out all the Ultramarines, and it feels like that they're more populous on the board. And so she was saying how dynamic. Like it feels like the battle is sort of raging and being waged in front of you. And I thought that was really cool. Like,
just very clever.
Like, what a really clever trick to like highlight different kind of the two different factions on the board.
All I do is shout into a microphone.
All these clever people with their fancy lights.
It's very humbling when I go there and I see people do things and I'm like, oh god, gosh, that's good. Anyway, back to screaming.
Talking of screaming, let's get onto the character itself, as much as you can say within the realms of whatever purity seals or NDAs you've signed with Games Workshop. But tell us a little bit.
A very private person.
He's just a very lives in a cabin in the woods. I mean, to tell us a little bit about the character of Games Workshop. Character of James Workshop.
The character of James Workshop. Well, that's an interesting one because I feel like he's different now to when we first started. He was just kind of a bit of a joke. And now, I mean, now he may as well be the real life CEO of Games Workshop. He is a completely three-dimensional. No, I can't even pretend that that's true.
There's just so much depth.
He is an almost three-dimensional character, with dreams and nightmares and a cat.
What's the cat called?
The cat is called Mordheim.
Mordheim. Oh yes,
Mordheim the cat.
Wasn't that within one of the recent Christmas ones?
No, that was a deleted scene.
Oh wow!
I gave everyone a little tease of on Twitter. So yeah, if you want the full James Workshop experience, you actually have to come follow me on Twitter.
Like, comment, and subscribe, and don't forget to click the affiliate links.
Yeah, just a tiny plug there.
Oh, but, if this goes up on YouTube, I'll just flash at Steve Pendus. That's Steve without an E at the end. I'll flash it up on the screen and maybe do a little box out button. But my YouTube skills are somewhat nascent at this stage.
The most obnoxious, the better, frankly.
Oh yeah, perhaps with like in like Comic Sans.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Underlined twice.
Underlined twice. Do you remember? Was this Word where you could like have sparkly writing?
Sparkly, as in like Comic Sans.
Almost like, you know how like
and just a bunch of clip art just thrown at the screen randomly.
Oh yeah, and almost like a bad now. MySpace page.
Yes. Oh, yes, with flashing banners.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be really disappointing for the viewers now if you don't pull this off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are primarily an audio podcast. So this will be probably the third or fourth video that actually goes on our brand new, which is, Steve, we're doing really well here. So, you know, everyone at Steve Pendus, without a second E on Steve. Clearly, that's where people need to go on Twitter. And we're talking about the at AOTI40K YouTube channel that is brand new, where we're uploading all of our new videos and some of our back catalogue as well. This is a great little bit of, we have segued into the most gratuitous self promoting bit of this is almost like an ad. We put hashtag ad here?
We are talking about a man who was entirely created, birthed even for the purpose of PR.
Wow.
So this is very fitting. This is what James would want.
This is what James would want. So what you talked about him being created
yeah
and you know, he's developed as a character. Is there any kind of inspirations or
yes, you know,
if I may, a touch of Steve Berry?
Who?
Steve Berry. Is it Steve Berry who's in the IT Crowd?
The Irish guy.
Oh God, I'm getting it wrong now, aren't I? And in What We Do in the Shadows?
Steve
Matt Berry. Matt Berry. No, Matt Berry, isn't it?
Matt,
as in Toast of London.
Hang on.
Mighty Boosh.
Mighty Boosh. You mean Julian Barrett?
No, Matt Berry.
Matt Berry.
Steve, I combined Steve Conlon and Matt Berry.
The Nickelodeon presenter.
Was he Nickelodeon? He was on the IT Crowd. Well, I mean, clearly not that much of an inspiration because I'm like, I can see some similarities there.
No, yeah, lots of people say that I'm doing a Matt Berry ripoff and it's very annoying, so I never pretend to, I always pretend.
Oh, you actually had me there. You had me. Yeah. I was like, how has Steve never heard of Matt Berry?
Yeah. Well, it's particularly annoying because the inspiration for James Workshop was a few different people. But one of the people that stuck out in my head was not Dennis Renham, but Denim Renham, Chris Morris, not Matt Berry, Matt Berry's dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Are you stressed? Are you stressed, Jen? Are you stressed? That's the guy. That's the guy I think I ripped off.
Okay.
And I was very surprised when everyone turned around and was like, he's ripping off this guy. I was like, how did they get the right show but the wrong character?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I think that maybe Matt Berry's the more, he's kind of more lodged in the, in the kind of social consciousness. Isn't
he's it? A lower common denominator, I'll grant you.
That's what everyone wants to hear about their characters. Yeah. You actually had me there. I was just like, how is this? I'm going to have to explain Matt Berry. Oh, God, how much of this are we going to cut out? But yes, so what is it, do you think, that kind of characters like James Workshop, like Denim Redham, kind of resonate with people? And Matt Berry, you know, I think he's in that place where, like, the characters he's playing, Matt Berry, it's the same as, you know, Deadpool. Is it Ryan Reynolds who plays Deadpool? You know, Ryan Reynolds just plays Ryan Reynolds these days,
yes,
doesn't he? And I think
Hang on, no, I agree to something I absolutely don't agree with then. Ryan Reynolds is a brilliant actor. Boo on you.
Oh, no doubt. But
how dare you say that about my good friend,
Ryan Reynolds. No doubt, clearly very talented man. These days,
from the beginning, he's always ever played the same part. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, all credit to him. You know, you've obviously got to play that part well to get to where you are, man. Or you know, have famous parents or however it works in Hollywood. But that kind of character, that kind of, in fact, well, rather than me describe the character, how would you describe the character?
How would I describe James?
Yeah.
Oblivious. But I think the important, it's interesting, right? So there is a lost James Workshop tape.
This sounds dangerous.
Yeah. And basically what happened was we shot a Christmas advert and we watched it back and we didn't like it. And there were other things wrong with it. But the main thing was that James just kind of came off as mean in it. Because he's usually rude and abrasive and difficult and ignorant and, you know, all of the things. But you generally, I feel, get a sense from him that he means well, and everything he does comes from a place of genuinely wanting you to get your Christmas presents. That's James, you know, very vaguely. And I think the character doesn't work if you don't, on some level, go, oh yeah, but he's all right, you know, he doesn't mean it. The moment you feel like he means it, it's like, oh. Oh, I feel like we're watching a different thing now.
He transforms into a lovable cad and bounder to genuinely an obnoxious, horrible person. Because
yes,
there are lots of people like that in real life who are quite self-serving, who are quite,
yes. And I almost made the mistake of just saying out loud what we're skirting around. Which is that, you know, if you take away that what's nice about James, what you get is the people who are currently running the country.
You get the Tory politician. I was just about to say, I was like, oh, how far do we want to go into politics in this? So here we go. Right, let's hit that. And I'm saying this as a straight, cisgender, white, public school educated male from the south of England. Like I recognize, I suppose, like I recognize my privilege, to kind of coin a phrase, but
good for you.
And it's something that I think you don't realize, you know, as a kid, you don't necessarily realize that you act in a certain way, and you perceive life through a very specific lens. And you perceive the world through a very kind of 2020 vision lens, because the world has been created for you by people like you.
Yes.
And when you look at, you know, whether it's a kind of like out of touch, you know, not talking about James Workshop here, but like whether it's like an out of touch, aggressive profit chasing CEO that you see in as a movie villain, you know, someone that's, mm-hmm. that's chasing the bottom line at the expense of the workers, or whatever it might be, or you look in real life, for examples, and you see people, you know, flouting rules that they've aggressively enforced through law enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. There's something, I think, for me, that's why people like characters like James Workshop, because
absolutely,
because it's just, it's poking, you know, it's delivered in a different style, but it is poking fun at people like that. And the every person can't necessarily, you know, oust the people in charge, you know, except for obviously the democratic vote, but that doesn't, obviously you don't always get what an individual person wants, you get what the majority of the country wants. So to have a character that in a lighthearted way pokes fun at this sort of out of touch, you know, privileged icon representing all the things that we find frustrating in the world, I think that's quite interesting.
It's very interesting and ceaselessly baffling as to why they let me do it. I think it was a very good initial idea, I think, that has sort of taken on a life of its own. And I think, yeah, like, especially because, like, we started James Workshop like 5-6 years ago now. And it feels like it was a different time. Like it was pre-coronavirus. It was 4 prime ministers ago. I feel like what the James that we have now, who is absolutely, on some level, and like, it's not just us, like, I see a lot of YouTube comments and stuff saying, oh, it's so good that they have a comedy Tory in charge of Games Workshop now. Like, that's, like, see that comment a lot, which is why I'm not massively afraid of just saying it out loud.
Yeah. I was thinking it, and I was like, are we going to go down this? Like, you know, trying to stay off politics and, you know, whatever, but, you know, no, I think you're right. And are you familiar with Rosie Holt, the comedian?
Yes,
she does an amazing, brilliant. I can't remember what it is, but it's like Amelia Huntley Brewer Hart the Third or something, her yeah. MP character. Yes.
She's great.
Perfect.
And yes, I think the reason that her character works so well is because you sit there and infuriatingly, you know that she means well.
Mm-hmm.
She's just so kind of like unanchored from reality.
Yeah, that's James. Oh, absolutely.
That's James entirely.
My favorite is when you see people commenting and be like, this is why, you know, what constituency are you in charge of? This is outrageous. And you're like, oh, they haven't clicked on her profile. Mm. And and that is the best bit about it, but also the worst bit about it, is that the best bit about it is people are kind of like jumping and be like, this is outrageous, this actual MP saying these things, that's how out of touch you are as a Tory politician. At the same time, it's absolutely tragic that there are people out there that think that this ridiculous character that this person is playing could be a legitimate person.
Sure, but there are people out there who, probably the same people, who believed that TikTok video was an actual giant.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, what is it like? It's like 30% of people believe in angels.
Next, you're going to be telling me Santa doesn't exist.
Well, no, obviously not, because he is real.
Thank heavens for that.
And he does bring presents. Just, you know, he's just slightly more capitalist than we all thought. But yeah, like I agree. In summation, I agree. And James is an interesting case study in like how it's almost impossible for there not to be in times like this, when you have a country in a place where ours is at the moment, it's impossible, just impossible for everything not to eventually start orbiting politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you know, there's a bit of that with James. Like, we had to be very careful about, again, how cutting he was.
Yeah.
We had to be very careful to make sure that it was always, it always came from a place of stupidity.
Mm-hmm. And genuine lighthearted humor slash yeah. good intentions, rather than being mean spirited, as you say.
Yeah. Or even just apathetic.
Mm.
It had to be an overwhelming desire to do it right. It had to be the reason that all babies went wrong. And that's what it's supposed to be like anyway.
I love it. Most importantly, perhaps, what breed of cat is Mordheim?
Mordheim is a dire cat, I think.
A dire cat?
I think that's what we went with.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All black?
No, very grey.
Oh.
Big and grey. It's difficult because when, if you see the picture, like, a Mordheim looks like a big cat, but obviously is made to look smaller by the fact that I'm holding him, and I'm about 9 feet tall, so it looks like an ordinary sized cat. But yeah, no, Mordheim's an absolute monster. Played by the very good actor Potato.
Oh, what an absolute angel. Shout out to Potato.
Yes.
When's that reel coming out? That's what I want to say.
Oh, his show reel, you mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. At this rate, Potato will be getting another agent before I do.
Oh, fair one. And all credit to him or her.
He deserves all the success he gets. He stood on the shoulders of giants. So
Mordheim, is that a name you chose? Is that a subject that's particularly close to your heart?
Mordheim, of course, is a subject that is close to my heart. I picked the name Mordheim. I think my cat came into the room and we were just messing about and we shot a bunch of scenes with Mordheim, or Potato. Because that was the video that I had to do in this room at my house during lockdown, with poor Kerry on the other end of a Discord call going, yeah, that looked great. The green screen's falling down again. So, yeah. But, yeah, it's interesting. There's a big team of people. I say big. There's a bigger team of people that work on James Workshop than you would think. Or maybe not. Maybe it's a smaller team than you think. I don't know how many you think. But it's nice. We have a system now where everyone gets a bit of input. Like, a lot of the stuff that ends up in the videos is never written down. It's just stuff that we're coming out with in the room, or stuff that I'm vomiting out, and whether or not people laugh in the room is whether or not it stays in the video usually. But yes, shout out to the team, because they do a very good job of both making sure it's funny and also making sure I keep my job.
I think that's something that Duncan, he of Too Thin Coats fame, made mm-hmm. super abundantly clear, certainly in his new venture, but definitely when he had the opportunity whilst working at Games Workshop, was that he had kind of become the kind of de facto face of Games Workshop from a kind of hobby perspective, and all the memes and stuff. And he was always resolute about highlighting Roger's work.
Yes.
And this is something that, you know, I met Duncan way back at Salute, like, oh goodness, like 2013 or something, ages mm-hmm. ago. Oh god, that's a decade ago, that's tragic. And he was, you know, he was even then was kind of really humble about, I suppose, the fame. And that stayed with him consistently through all these kind of the external engagements. When you saw him, he was always highlighting, it's not just me, it's a team, you know, and would highlight people like Roger. And I think that is important.
To
recognize that. But behind every great character is a whole host of people that support it.
Yeah, and it's true, because I mean, you look at it now when he's kind of left the team behind, and his stuff is all awful now.
We'll stick that on a quote as the
mm-hmm. Yep. No, Duncan's a good guy. Though of course, officially, I have no idea who you're talking about.
Naturally, absolutely. Yep. There are no other paints but the Citadel ones. So talking a little bit about hobby in general, you know, was Warhammer something that you were super passionate about and you were like, I can't wait to do something for Games Workshop? Or is it something you kind of fell into and developed a hobby love as a result? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so another really long-winded answer. I was super passionate about it when I was younger. I think, like, obviously, I've given myself away as an enormous fan of Mordheim, the game. But yeah, fantasy battles. I had something like a 9,000, 10,000 point undead army before it all got split up into vampire counts and Tomb Kings.
Can I interrupt there slightly and sort of, can you tell us a little bit about that army?
Well, obviously, it was led by Clown Nagash.
Naturally. On a 40 mil Goblin Green base.
Yep. Though I think his base was red. My particular Nagash. But yeah, Vlad, Isabella, Conrad, Arkan. I had a unit of mummies. I had some skeleton spearmen. I had some vampire cavalry. No. I had some white cavalry and some skeleton horseman cavalry. I had a couple of screaming skull catapults. I had some chariots. The list goes on and on. I had a zombie dragon.
That zombie dragon was a great model, wasn't it?
It was great. It was great. So good. I had Heinrich Kemmler and Krell, though obviously we now know.
Do you mean
know...
Necromancer in hat?
I do mean Necromancer in hat. Yes, I do mean.
Or is it perhaps with hat? He's not always in it. Sometimes he doffs it. Sometimes he dons it. Yeah. It's just, he's that kind of whimsical necromancer.
I think
cuts his own detail.
Yeah. Yes. I think I always think back bitterly. Now that we know that Heinrich Kemmler ended up not being a ride or die necromancer, I always think back bitterly to how he was so cherished in my army. Oh well, but yes, it was just a massive army, basically. Mm-hmm. If they made an undead model, I had a version of it because I just thought the undead were so cool, and I was right, you know. I think, like a lot of people, I kind of built this ridiculous hoard of plastic and metal. And I think I played one battle with it ever. And then packed it away and never looked at it again.
Yeah, classic. So here's a question, Steve. What do you call your mass of unused, uncompleted items? I'm trying not to use any of the words in either of the two options, but...
eBay fodder, I think, is my
eBay
term for
fodder.
It.
Okay. Oh, so I'm think my the two the go to two would be pile of shame or pile of potential.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean.
But
yes.
But by absolutely, as someone that is a almost a professional eBayer at this stage, the thing is, I'm like, oh, I would quite like. Let's think. I would. Oh, here's an example. Like, oh, I would quite like some more Cadian ordnance weapons batteries. That would be really cool. I'm like, well, currently. They're not out, and they are currently on pre-order. You can, of course, head to the Ashes of the Imperium Element Games affiliate link to order them. more importantly, oh, every day is a PR moment.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I could wait 2 weeks to until the or some weeks until they're available for pre-order, or I could just buy another box of Cadia stands, but then I'll eBay the rest because I don't need it. You know, there's a codex in there that's not available yet. I'll eBay that. Blah blah blah. And I can literally see the box. I can see both boxes opened. And now pre-orders are up. Who's going to buy like some random secondhand, you know, unused models when you could just, you know, buy them new from Games Workshop?
Someone will. Someone wants every part of that box but the ordnance.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You know they do. You know they do. In the same way that someone wants 3.5 broken skeleton chariots from 11 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh God, 15 years ago. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something like that.
Skeleton chariots. Now, chariots definitely are a Tomb King vibe, and now you're talking in my kind of business.
Well,
my best mate Chris was the kind of vampire counts kind of guy, yeah. And I was definitely like, oh, you know, all that bone and turquoise, the kind of Egyptology of it all. You shabti.
See, this is all after my time.
Oh.
I think it was actually the fracturing of undead into vampire counts and Tomb Kings that kind of properly broke me out of the hobby. Because I then had like two-thirds of an army and a third of an army. And I was like, I looked at them and went, I'm not starting again.
Now I would have gone, ooh, what a great opportunity to build 4,000 points of each force.
Mm. Yeah, see, that's it. I think at that point was when someone kind of put Dawn of War in front of me, and I was like, this is easier.
Yes.
This is much easier.
And I love that when they, you know, after the success of Dawn of War 1, they made a great version, building on the success of Dawn of War 1, that was Dawn of War 2, which was like...
If you blaspheme against Dawn of War 2.
Which was like... And then Dawn of War 3 was even better, right?
Dawn of War 3 will live in our hearts. Much like a knife.
Yes, embedded. We'll never... Yeah. If you take it out, then the body will die.
That's interesting, though. Do you see Dawn of War 2 as similar?
No. I'm being a facetious little minx. Dawn of War 1 is the best version.
That's fair. That's a fair opinion to have. It's wrong, but
yeah.
It's fair.
Yeah.
Dawn of War 2 is by far the best game in the series. And I'll tell you why. Because it is the perfect prototype for a Mordheim game.
Ooh.
Because if you picture that campaign where you have like four units, or is it like it's like four characters that you can switch out for a slightly different unit, that's a war band.
I think the Mordheim would be best represented by something like XCOM.
Yeah,
I mean, XCOM is just science fiction Mordheim. Are you about to say Mechanicus?
What did you think of City of the Damned?
To my eternal shame, I never played it.
That's like the one game that we got.
I know, but I loved Mordheim, the tabletop version, so much that I was like, I don't want to play something that is that is kind of that might almost ruin that. Is that a bad example?
That's like, fair. Yeah, I get
Vermintide,
that.
Great.
Vermintide is really good, yeah. I'm yet to play Darktide, but I'm excited.
Well, we just need to find a couple of other players, Steve, and then we've got a great little party going.
I mean, name the day.
Name the day. So you were telling us about your Warhammer journey.
Distracted
by undead. No. My apologies. I was the one that interrupted.
So yes, I was big into it as a kid. / teenager, and then completely fell off, like a lot of people do, I understand. And
it is a tale as Bell once said, as old as time.
Yeah, though it's interesting because obviously you fall out of the modeling hobby side of it, but the IP is there all the way through, because you know, like you say, it was Dawn of War 1 and then Dawn of War 2, never Dawn of War 3, but like now we've got Total War, which is fantastic.
It's glorious.
Even Space Marine was good. I liked Fire Warrior, in spite of the fact that it wasn't a good game.
But that's a great example, Fire Warrior, of how powerful this IP is. And you know, as nerdy boys that were taken the mic out of at school for liking nerdy hobbies. It's so cool to see, like, the mainstreamification of nerddom in general, whether
you
know, Critical Role doing D&D, you know, like Call of Duty being so huge when it was like, you know, a nerdy World War II game that you really liked back in the day, all that jazz. But
slight barb there, yeah. Go on.
Go on.
It was once a really good World War II game, wasn't it, that we all liked?
Oh, right, yeah, no, sorry. the past tense there in that quote wasn't meant to be a criticism, I can see it.
Accidentally
that.
Was, though.
It's absolutely true. Oh, can you imagine if they invested all that time? Like, the thing is, the tactical thing sells, doesn't it?
I still remember crossing the river into Stalingrad in that, I think it was the first game.
Yeah, and you don't get given a rifle. You have to follow someone.
Yeah, the guy in front of you gets given a rifle. Yeah. It's so good.
Oh, and as someone who's like, you know, in top five favorite films, you know, growing up was Enemy at the Gates.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is glorious. Oh yeah, and there is literally like a kind of Enemy at the Gates replicant scene, isn't there? It's like in the fountain. Yeah. Wait until the
you have to be the runner for the sniper. It's brilliant.
Oh, wait until the artillery shell strikes and all that jazz.
Yeah, and the crossing of the Red Square with you've got the commissar behind you who is just merrily shooting people when he's not screaming into a megaphone. It's fantastic.
Also, tangential to 40K. I like what you did there, Steve. Exactly. Very smoothly done. But yeah, so like, you know, this whole IP is so, it's so strong that regardless of how good the actual game was. Like, if Fire Warrior wasn't set in the 41st millennium and it wasn't embedded within that kind of deep, rich, relatable lore, like, would you?
I don't think either of us would even have heard about it.
Absolutely. It would be yet another game that, like, for example, the Wheel of Time book series by Robert Jordan, which was recently made into a average Amazon Prime show. There is a computer game version of that, which only reason I think people have even played it is because it relates to an incredibly popular series of fantasy books.
Oh,
it is game. Otherwise forgettable and just you know, just not that good. but that speaks to the strength of the Warhammer IP.
Yeah, it's,
which I think is great. Like, if you have something that powerful that can carry something like Fire Warrior, like, you've got to be onto a good thing, right?
You should be.
If only we had a dashingly handsome, charming CEO to help market it.
Well, speaking of dashingly handsome, I am genuinely excited to see what Amazon and Henry do with the IP.
I did see a Reddit post recently that he's in talks with Anna de Armas for it. For, you know, I don't know where I didn't read the article. I merely screenshotted it and sent it to a friend. But I hope everyone's incredibly good looking. You know, that's what 40K needs to be, right?
I hope they get a bunch of very good looking actors and they make them absolutely repulsive.
Anna de Armas, what are you playing? Are you playing like a seductive, you know, no, I'm a service girl.
I want her to play a servitor.
Yeah, can you imagine?
With most of her head missing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, just massive bionics all over the shop. It's like, is that? Is that Anna de Armas under there?
That is her, isn't it?
or just a machine spirit voice. Like, who?
Oh no, that's not nearly
what,
as.
What did you? What did you play? I played a Land Raider.
Yeah, they prayed to me and then they crashed me. Yeah.
My twin link lance cannons missed.
Yeah, but yes, we got diverted again. I had that experience. The IP stuck with me because, you know, it does. It's very good. And then, yeah, completely by accident, I got pulled in to do audio dramas with Games Workshop. A very talented man by the name of Matt Renshaw plucked me from total obscurity and said, "Oh, I like the way you scream, boy." And then
that's what everyone wants to hear.
Yeah. In my case specifically, it was exactly what I wanted to hear. And he just kept putting me in stuff and it was very good. And then we did a bunch more stuff. I got to be Gazkull. I got to be,
wow. You got to be Gazkull.
Yeah. Yeah. I am the canon voice of Gazkull, which is cool.
In which book's that?
I think it was, Eye of the Beast. There we go. Yeah, Saga of the Beast.
Saga of the Beast. Not one I've listened to yet, but that Audible credit's not going to spend itself.
Yeah. Being able to speak High Gothic in Orky was a lot of fun. I'm Joseph Bugman. So that's very, very
now,
cool.
Now, well, here's a question for you. Which character have you enjoyed playing the most? You've just name dropped some pretty big deals in the in the 41st millennium and the old
world. So the Realm Slayer one was very fun, but I think in terms of character, I mean, there's some real close runners up. Hamilcar was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Joseph Bugman was fun because one of the things they had me do as Joseph Bugman was I don't think they ever implemented it, but it was supposed to be half hourly. PA announcements in Bugman's at the HQ.
Oh no. I mean, Steve, like, love your work and all that, but for what? For what reason?
For no reason. You were
for
just
atmosphere. Hashtag atmosphere.
For atmosphere. And it was one of those where you kind of get in the room, and this happens more often than you'd like to admit, especially with like voice acting, is you get in the room and they give you the script. And they say, here we go, have a couple of minutes read of that, and then let's do it. And you look, and you go, there's three lines here. And they're like, yep. And it was like, well, why don't we do some variants, kind of mix things up. And we ended up doing a bunch of stuff. And still, I was thinking to myself at the end of the day, every half hour, huh? Really? Now, really? Every half hour?
As anyone that's played a long game of 40K or something in a local Games Workshop in the early 2000s or something like that, that playlist isn't going to repeat any more times than necessary.
Nope. Yeah, absolutely not. So it did not surprise me at all that they never implemented that, but it was still very fun.
I bet.
But yeah, the number one absolute fun job was Gazkul. Just it, you can't beat how much fun it is being an orc.
In voice acting or life?
Both.
A little bit of both.
Being an orc is... I've been demons, I've been sorcerers, I've been necromancers, I've been cryptomancers.
This has the feel of a bit of poetry or a lyric. I've been necromancers, I've been cryptomancers, but nothing compares to being the blaster master that is raw, you know. I love it. God, seeing like Gazkul, I think you could do like a good, as people have been doing with kind of goth rockers, like a Gazkul DJ set. I can see that.
I would be up for that,
What would Gazkul's DJ set, DJ name be?
Ooh, DJ Magthraga?
Yeah. DJ Armageddon?
DJ Armageddon.
I think that's possibly a listeners in the comments /
yes.
Write in. What would Gazkul Tharaka's DJ name be?
MC Biggest Git.
Oh, like that.
Yeah, difficult. Because, I think if he was going to pick a name, Gazkul would absolutely pick something in High Gothic.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, definitely.
One of my closest friends is has a classics degree.
Yeah, and there we go then.
Anything in High Gothic, every single time I see a good little lore snippet that's like, technically incorrect Latin, which is about 99% of every bit of High Gothic that's ever been written.
Yeah.
I just send it to him. I'm just like, Chris, what does this say in Latin? I've stumbled across this in a text. I'm not familiar with it. And he's just like, stop sending me incorrect
grammatical. It means nothing.
It means nothing. It's not real. I didn't spend 4 years at Edinburgh University to be sent Warhammer more. Lucky he's a big nerd like me, so he knows the source.
So I have a lot of sympathy with your friend because we have those arguments in the booth a lot.
Like technically it's code of seas.
Well, my pet peeve is Medicae.
Okay.
Because it's Medicae.
Yeah.
And it drives me absolutely insane every time I have to read it out in the wrong way, because that's the canon way. It drives me absolutely up the wall.
Not Adeptus Custodes.
No, that one's fine.
That breaks me. That one's fine. Yeah.
That one's fine. There are a couple. The very first bit of fan mail I ever got was someone correcting my pronunciation of a planet.
Oh, that's glorious. A, was, which planet? And B, what happened next?
You've never heard of the planet before because it wasn't canon. It was made up for the audio drama, which I took extreme pleasure in relaying back to this idiot.
Oh, that's so...
I don't know where you got your information, but that doesn't exist.
I think you'll find in White Dwarf 1963, blah, blah, blah. What is it about... Now, kind of perhaps going on to a slightly more serious question, what is it about fandoms in general that obsess about the minutia? Why do you think people are so resistant to new ideas within existing fandoms, whether that be 40K, whether that be in Star Wars, whatever? Like, what do you think it is that makes people so protective over something?
They care about it, I think. I think it's a maybe frustrating symptom of an ultimately good thing, I think. I think the flip side of that is when you get people like me who have done a relatively small thing as part of a relatively niche thing, and the fan base almost universally rally around me and make a big deal out of me and make me feel nice and special. The flip side of that is being very annoyed about it when someone gets the spelling wrong. as they should. I think it becomes like, I don't think it's any different to, people getting, flustered when people get stuff that I think arguably matters more wrong, if that makes sense. You see it when Oh God, I'm trying to think of a good example, and I can't think of one off the top of my head. I've run out of Pepsi Max. It's all falling apart.
think of something that isn't female space marines. Think of something that isn't female space marines.
I wasn't thinking about female space marines. I do have an official stance on female space marines, which is whatever Games Workshop end up doing will be the correct one.
Well, naturally.
Yeah. Female space marines, I think, is a bad example.
I'm again only being facetious.
Because I think that is different. I think a better example is the Age of Sigmar one.
The old world versus Age of Sigmar kind of.
Yeah, debate.
I mean, the best bit there, Steve, is that it isn't a debate. No one is saying one is right or wrong. Right. One is merely a product that Games Workshop currently sell. And one is merely a product that Games Workshop previously sold.
The debate I've read in some spaces is that they should never have changed it. What, Age of Sigmar is terrible.
Why
do they ever take away what we love?
But I'm a mere shill. Are we not all mere shills for the corporation?
But I do have sympathy with that viewpoint, because if it's something that you really care about and it feels like someone is so much not respecting it, but like, I guess it feels like they are in some way taking it away from you slightly,
mm-hmm.
or changing it to something you don't recognize, or even just in your eyes, getting it slightly wrong when it comes to, for instance, pronunciations or whatever. I think, yeah, it can really upset isn't the right word, but frustrate, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a personal example of that, actually.
Yeah, go on.
So, used to be massively into, I suppose, like the competitive scene of Age of Sigmar in the UK. Mm. Even started up an Age of Sigmar podcast called Priority Role, which I've kind of since scrapped. I was really invested into Age of Sigmar as a game, having strangely not been that interested in Warhammer Fantasy as a tournament level. Always, you know, hugely into the lore, the background, the books. Had, you know, collections as a kid growing up, but never was into the game as a kind of social mechanic / gaming mechanic. Mm. And when they, you know, Games Workshop was saying, oh, this big announcement coming up. And then they released this kind of, well, the big announcement is the old world as a game. I personally felt this really weird, I don't know how to describe it, but it was almost like the thing that I had become so invested in as a game, I'd formed friendships over this game. I'd met people purely at Age of Sigmar tournaments who I, having never been to a Warhammer Fantasy Battle tournament, and despite them being, you know, kind of notable tournament gamers in previous editions, I had only ever met through Age of Sigmar, and I would never have met had I not played Age of Sigmar. It was almost like, not that it was being taken away, but it was almost like it was being attacked somewhat, and that therefore by, you know, by the next two steps or so, that I was being attacked. And I think that's, you know, clearly something I need to work through with my therapist a little bit, but I think that's something that I think people feel quite personally, is when something that they are so invested in, there's the insinuation that that isn't valid, isn't allowed, isn't good, isn't right, isn't correct, isn't not, you know, current. It's a short hop from, you know, this isn't currently sold. You know, it's a psychologically short step. It's a perhaps logical long step between this is not currently being sold by Games Workshop. This is not current. This is not right. You are not right, et cetera, et cetera. And I think for especially, you know, Warhammer as a hobby is often quite a, I suppose, like a refuge, a bit of escapism away from that. And when that's threatened, that's very easy to feel threatened yourself.
Yeah, I think there is a deeper thing going on here as well, where like, and I will touch on this incredibly lightly, because this is another 2-hour conversation.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
But I think there is an element of, I can't remember who I heard talking about this, but as the again, the political climate like moves in a certain direction, and people feel their political power as an individual being taken away, they become more invested in terms of their influence as a consumer and their kind of cultural credit, rather than, if you know, because they don't feel they have any political influence. And I think, yeah, like you can't, if you feel totally powerless when it comes to who's in charge, the one thing that you can exert influence over is you can boycott that game that you love if they do something wrong. And it kind of gives you a bit of your agency back.
Oh, this is something that I've done in real life. I basically, so in 2021, I went through a divorce, it was in sort of 2020 and 2021 was, really struggling with my mental health and my life. This isn't even a joke. I wish this was, but, I like the idea of this being the build up to a punchline, but sadly it isn't. And genuinely, I'm only sort of saying this because, perhaps someone out there is going through something similar. I went through lots of, fairly intense things emotionally and mentally. And I was making decisions based on, I think if they were made without that context, people would say, oh, that's a bit rash. But actually looking back on it, it was something that I could control.
Yeah.
It was something that I could exert influence over. And I made kind of professional decisions that had not life-changing consequences, but I made fairly stark professional decisions based on the fact that that's what I felt was right. And the reason I felt that was right was because I desperately craved in a world where my spouse who I'd pledged to till death do us part and everything and my whole social and domestic dynamic had fallen apart. I was looking for something to grab hold of and say, I'm in charge of this. I can make this decision. This is mine. Mm-hmm. And I think, without wanting to kind of sound too grandiose about it, I feel like that's the same to cotton on to what you were saying there, Steve, was I feel like that's the same in the hobby space. People are frustrated. There are changes, whether you're you're a narrative gamer and you don't like how seasonal and Apex Legendy Warhammer has become with 6 monthly updates, whether that's the case, or whether you're really, really into squats and they've released the Legions of Votan and you don't like the Leagues of Votan rather, and you don't like that because they're not quite, they don't have trains and stuff.
Everyone loved the Leagues of Votan.
I mean, right, who doesn't? But to kind of latch on to something that you can control is really important to people, because people don't like to feel powerless, do they?
I know. I think it's extremely difficult to just have that feeling without it becoming, without doing something about it, or it becoming something quite damaging to you. It's one or the other. You either have to find, like you say, something that you can kind of anchor yourself to in terms of how you are engaging with the world, I think it ends up doing you a mischief,
or you let go of that and you say, this isn't important, I don't need to worry about this, I'm just going to let people do their own thing with their little plastic toys. But in doing so, you're essentially saying, if this isn't important, why have I invested so much of myself into it?
Yeah, I mean, you're checking
therefore,
out. Basically.
That was a waste. Like, therefore, that was a waste of, and then you get into...
Like I say, it can do you a mischief.
It can certainly. Yeah.
But ultimately, that's why I think James Workshop is so great.
Where are we going with this?
I was really stretching there for a segue and it didn't come.
I can, it's approaching, 9:30. I think Dan wants to go to bed, fine, we'll bring this back to James Workshop. Fine.
Threw out the fishing rod and it, I hit nothing.
you didn't even get a Magikarp.
I didn't get a Magikarp.
On the subject of things that are super important to people, we've touched on Mordheim, we've touched on the Old World. Games Workshop are releasing more and more content, sort of preview content about the Old World game.
Yeah,
is that something that you're excited about?
Yeah. Short answer is it's absolutely yes. Like yourself, I grew up with it, so it's no matter what came after it, no matter how good it was, how good it was, I was always going to have that nostalgic glow for the Old World. Especially having now played all three Total War Warhammers, I think I'm even more invested in the Old World than I was before.
Yeah.
Definitely really looking forward to that.
I feel like it's the right time to bring it back.
Yeah.
We transitioned from the Old World, transitioned from Warhammer Fantasy Battles into the Age of Sigmar for a reason. fine. But with, I suppose, the context of, you know, Warhammer Total War, with the context of, you know, Netflix and Henry Cavill and everything, I think if you were going to revisit a previous version of the game and update it, like, now is that time.
Yes.
You know, had they released, and this is I think the key point for me is, had whatever the old world is, whatever form it takes, you know, for all we know, it could be 15 mil, you know, it could be Warmaster. Well, apparently it's not, it's 28 mil and it's fairly not predictable. It's the wrong word, but it's a kind of traditional version. But whatever form it took, had that been, I want to say 10th edition, was 9th edition, the last version of Fantasy, whatever it was, had the edition that Age of Sigmar was, had that been what we're going to get as the old world, I don't necessarily think that that would have been great, because we've got the old world within the context of the Age of Sigmar, within the context of you know, Warcry existing within the Age of Sigmar universe. Blood Bowl has remained within the old world universe. You know, you don't have Stormcast Blood Bowl teams, do you?
Somehow,
that's don't say that too loudly. That's just a product away from happening. But without the, I think, for me, without losing the old world, you can't market it as a specialist game, and you can't kind of say this is a kind of return to the glory days, as it were. And I like to think that it's gonna be supported in the same way that Age of Sigmar is, with kind of consistent releases. But it, you know, Age of Sigmar, I think, is gonna be the primary game.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that. I think my concern almost would be the opposite, that if they had released it before now, if they had released it before Age of Sigmar had managed to get really properly established, then Age of Sigmar would have been completely lost.
Oh, absolutely.
I think if I were them, and I'm not, let me stress, but if I
if Steve was there, not if James Workshop, you know, this is absolutely a conversation with the person, not the character.
Exactly. But if I was them, I would be more concerned about people flocking back to the old world and abandoning Age of Sigmar than I would be about them just not being interested in the old world. Just because I think, like, still, Age of Sigmar has come on hugely, and there are bits of it that I really like. Still, the old world has 30 years of having been fleshed out, and like has so much pedigree that it's difficult to hold one up next to the other, and for Age of Sigmar to not seem thin in comparison. But I mean, nothing can be done about that, and I think they've held off long enough now that Age of Sigmar has enough about it that they can still be like, this is the primary game, like you say. But yeah, so I think that's from people I have spoken to, that was the concern rather than the other way around. But I mean, I haven't actually spoken to anyone on the design team for either game, so I actually don't know if that's true.
Don't worry, I'm not looking for exclusive insights or anything like that. It's the game.
Oh, and even if I was willing to give them, I don't have any.
But so now's your chance to make something up. I can't wait for the Adeptus Astartes to be reinforced in the Tilian Dogs of War.
No, I mean, what I'm definitely not allowed to talk about is like the 7 or 8 Warhammer TV specials, all centered around James Workshop.
Is it true that Henry Cavill will be your sidekick in the upcoming Netflix series?
No. Henry, I don't want to air dirty laundry, but Henry probably isn't going to be working with me specifically anytime soon. Because I did turn him down. I did snub him quite hard when he asked me to come help him make a show.
Oh.
So when he asked me to come make a show, he said, I'm out of my depth. I'm talking to all these people at Amazon and they were all very clever.
Oh, the worst.
They're asking me to do maths and things. And he's never been good at maths, bless him.
No.
And he said, I just need...
And they want him to do a shirtless scene. He's not that confident.
Oh, bless him. He's really not. Especially because he went out of his way...
What, Scrawny Henry?
Yeah, he tried so hard, and if you look
and he got so far.
And he got so far.
He got so far. But what?
And in the end...
What? Let me guess. It didn't?
It didn't...
It didn't really matter?
It didn't really matter.
Oh, Henry, what's he like?
Oh, bless it. He tries.
I think that's all you can say, really.
That's all you can say about Henry Cavill. All you can say about
Henry,
him is that he tries.
He tries Cavill.
That's his nickname.
I mean, for goodness sake, this man, it's like his brother's a Royal Marine commanding officer or something like that. Like, you know, the Cavill gene seed is strong, let's say.
Bless him. That's a good way of putting it.
Well, Steve, I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you about all things Warhammer. However, it is getting on, and it is a weekday evening. It is a school night, so I shan't steal too much more of your time. In the interest of the everlasting PR machine that we have discussed, is there anything you want to promote or shout out at the moment?
No. If I had been really clever, when I first realized that, for anyone who doesn't know, the reason I am about to appear on every Pobby podcast that you've ever heard of, and some that you haven't, then the reason you're about to get really sick of the sound of my voice is that I recently discovered that my agent had been ignoring all calls for interviews and podcasts. So now I'm doing all of them by mistake. And if I'd been very clever, I would have waited to announce that until I had something to promote.
Oh, yeah.
I have nothing.
Like being on the Graham Norton show.
Absolutely.
Like, so what is it you're here for? Just for the lols.
I just had a free evening, mate. Yeah, that's effectively the position I'm in now. And it is, no one I've spoken to about it can quite believe that I've done this. Just cashing all of my chips. But yeah, I guess follow me on Twitter, I guess, is all I can say. And if I do have anything fun to announce, it'll be there.
Excellent. And that is at Steve Pendus without the second E.
Stev Pendus.
I should be pronouncing it like that. Oh, are you correcting my pronunciation?
Have we come full circle? That's how you know I'm a fan, you see.
Oh, there we go. And to come full circle, I'll finish on a little story. When Henry of Cavill fame first started posting pictures of his custodies, and it was first revealed that he was into 40k, I attempted to slide into his DMs on Instagram with the podcast Instagram channel. Went, hey, would you like to come on to Ashes of the Imperium to talk about Warhammer? Sadly, he left me on red.
Oh, how unprofessional!
Outrageous. So Henry, I'm disappointed. When you listen to this. I'm disappointed. Not angry, of course.
You know he does listen to hobby podcasts while he paints, apparently.
Well, outrageous.
I'm going to make sure I smear his name on everyone I go on, just in case.
Good man. Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for your time tonight. And
same. Thank you
hopefully
for having
we will throw some dice on a tabletop sometime in the future.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. You can see how you fare against my Auruk brutes.
Oh, you're an Iron Jaws fan. I knew you were a good lad, but you know, now that you've confirmed that you're an Iron Jaws fan, we're definitely best of friends.
I've got five green fridges with your name on them.
Right, so team, if you like what you've heard, obviously follow Steve at Stev Pendus on Twitter. We are, of course, at AOTI40K. On Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and our new YouTube channel. And until next time, we wish you all the best. Keep calm and crusade on.
Bye.